Welcome to SciGest, your fortnightly serving of digestible science from plant and food research.
Hi, I am Tom Moore, and welcome to another SciGest podcast. This week we're speaking to Jean Lu about his journey from collecting soil samples in Tipuki through to becoming a data scientist. Welcome, Jean.
Thank you very much, Tom.
I'd like to start off and just work out how long you've been at PFR and how you found that journey so far.
I've been in PFR in total about 8 years now, so next month will be my anniversary. Still in the data application team as a data scientist. So as you know, before I started as a technician, soil sampling around the countries in the North Island. And later I take up a researcher associate role in the modeling team and then start to do a little bit biophysical modeling. And last year I joined the data science team to do more data work. So that's roughly the high level journey I've been. In terms of the experiments, I guess I quite enjoy it. The PFR is a really large organization and we have different branches and sites in different locations. That means if I know what I want to do, I probably can have opportunities internally.
Cool. So tell me a bit more about what you started off digging holes. What was that actually like and what did that involve day to day?
Digging holes is like at one point, it's only part of the life that I was joking a lot around. Probably make people a bad expression, like I'm just digging holes constantly every day, but that's only the tiny part, I guess. The technician role I was in was plant physiology team. So we mainly do agronomy work or try to understand how the crops interact with the environment. So we have quite a big industry-funded projects like from Zespri, from Vegetable New Zealand, Onion New Zealand, or Potato New Zealand, and Foundation for Arable Research. So the crops we're dealing with mainly are annual crops like onions, potatoes, maize, wheat, barley, oats. And we also have this Zespri works. That's the majority of the digging holes around because we have to install some instruments called flux meters, which is capturing the drainage from the soil. So the flux meters is big long plastic tubes at roughly 1.2 meters and we have to bury it down to the ground. So that's the whole digging part. We have 12 sites around Bay of Plenty. So the establishment we have to, there was another colleague called Nathan. So that's my mate we would use to travel together. And the project is actually led by Stephen Crane. So that's he was the leading sensor, also a mentor for me. So he taught me lots of about sensors. Like he set up this fancy technical things, engineer things, and then capture all the environmental metrics and hopefully to provide us enough information to understand the environment and the plant.
Did you come over to New Zealand for the job at Plant and Food Research?
No, I did a year study over in Lincoln University. I was studying agriculture, so I graduated as an agriculture degree. Then because my family, they are all in the construction industries, I couldn't really find the job I like in the agriculture industry because I wasn't sure what kind of job I want to do. So my dad, he just said, "Oh, if you don't know, just go with family business." And then I started as a construction technician. I know nothing about. Construction technician was like reading blueprints and then you translate the blueprint to the workers or the builders and how do you build the factory. I was in the building factory business. I didn't like it. That wasn't me. And 3 years later, I totally had enough. So my wife and I made this big decision, like we had enough, let's go somewhere else. Yeah, that also part of the reason because we live in Beijing and we separate with our daughter. That was the biggest challenging emotionally and also financially, because living in Beijing is not cheap. So there was both emotional, financial stresses and we had enough. We did a little bit of research like around the globe, which country we can go. And it seems New Zealand is the economy was based in agriculture. We came here, I did 1 year postgraduate diploma in agricultural science. I think I learned a lot, especially my English improved quite a bit.
Did you realize quite early on in that degree that you made the right choice to coming to New Zealand and that was a very fulfilling course?
Well, the course is what definitely interests me, and the way the professors and the lecturers were teaching was super fascinating. Like students can just question during the class and raise their hands, ask questions that wasn't normal in China. Mm-hmm. And I guess if I know what I want to do or into the science, I don't know. That because the 9 years ago, I was a little bit desperate. Like, this is my last try in my life. I have to get it right. Otherwise, I have no second chance. So I just put all my energy into the study. I did quite enjoy the study because the subject I'm familiar with, and I'm into plant, especially physiology stuff.
And how did you get that link into PLEAFAR from study into the working life?
Good question. So that was a little bit of personal relationship development. So when I did the course, I chose a paper from Professor Derek Moot. And every year before summer, we have this opportunity to go to the industry and make an internship or try to find some summer project to work on. And close to the end of my study, I start to ask him, is there any opportunities? And just happened, like in the field operation teams led by Shane Meili, every year they need at least one or two casual students. Mm-hmm. And Professor Derek recommended me, and I got into the casual role with another mate called Sam Molson. So we worked during the summer, and I started to pick up, and then basically just try to learn more what happens in the field and the science area. And then about half a year later, they keep me in the role for quite a bit. And then in the Hawke's Bay, the physiology team, they have a research auxiliary role. No, a technician role opened, and they offered me the role and asked if I want to go. I said, yeah, why not? I will be super thrilled. And then I took the role and moved up to North. Yeah, that's the journey.
And how long were you in the field for?
About 3.5 years. The first year was super exciting. Mm-hmm. I guess I should share a little bit why I chose different roles, like jumping between teams and North Island and South Island, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. The first year you were there, it was really exciting. Was it like the honeymoon period?
Yeah, definitely. That was definitely a honeymoon. Like, we have traveled around the country by driving because we have to carry whole lots of gears, like the soil sampling gears, the plant sampling gears, scales, bins, plastic bags to carry the samples, chili bean stuff. So Nathan and I would drive this big ute and basically travel the whole North Island. I think every year we on average at least 20,000 Ks. And then we got visit different places I'd never seen. It's quite different, the scenery, compared to South Island.
Great way to see the country. And did it confirm that you made the right choice in coming to New Zealand? Do you see the vast agricultural plains? Are you like, this is somewhere I can make a difference?
Definitely, yes. That point I was super, especially after we got the residence visa. Like, this is definitely the right move. Man, and everything was so like, new and fresh, and then after I overcome that the culture shock, and especially after the first vote I gave, that was two elections ago, I finally feel like I can vote. That's something new. Well, I mean, in China you can vote as well, but it's really hard. So you have to work very, very hard to be the representative. But here, every general public, you have a vote, right? Coming back to the role, I think after the first 1.5 year, I start to question myself. Like, I'm busy in sampling stuff, and where the data goes? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's making me wondering. Like, we put so much effort into the ground, I haven't seen the data or a graph, what it looks like.
Mm. That was similar to my journey. I started off looking at invertebrates, and I could see that part of the scientific method, collecting the data and doing lab work, but I didn't see how it was connected to the report writing and how it was analyzed and then the knowledge you gain from that. So it's quite isolated. I wonder if that was similar for you, that you wanted to sort of see a broader breadth of the method.
Exactly the same. Like, this is what we spend a whole lot of time on. What's the end use of it? I want to see the big picture. I want to see who using it, what to use it for. So I started chasing my lab manager, like, about what are those numbers will be used for. And then I was lucky because we have this big instrument called Grader. It's developed by the Ruhr Kura team. I think grading apples and other round shape vegetables.
So it's a big machine that apples go into, and then it like uses some sort of detection to work out what class of apple they go into?
Yeah, that was designed for apple, but we can use it for onions. It has this little cups that can weigh individual onions and measuring the diameters. So those are the key metrics for post-harvest in onion industry. And it processed the onion super fast, like 1 minute it can capture 60 or more onions. It's way beyond human capability, but the data produced is huge as well. So we run into this big challenge, like how do we analyze? Because you open the spreadsheet, the Microsoft Excel frozen because there are just too many rows. Mm-hmm. And I was also lucky, I got Lindley starting Hawke's Bay as well. So she did some introductory course in R. I just jumped in, and she has been a great mentor to me and teaching me how to use R and how to solve difficult challenges in the data science area. So yeah, that's probably the ticking off point for me. Like it's like open another whole new world.
Mm-hmm. What's your interest mainly in the practical knowledge that you generate using the science? Or was it more like, how can we visualize the data that's coming in and make stronger inferences from?
I guess at the beginning it was more the later one you mentioned, like more like I want to see what's in there, mm-hmm. what's the graph looks like. But later, like when I see many graphs, they're like for physiology or agronomic performance experiments, the graph is pretty much looks similar. You got a sigmoid regression, that's too technical, like a line that grows a little bit and then get plateau, so it always like that. But there are so many factors come in play, the fertilizer, sprays, environment, agronomic management, irrigation, for example. So I want to know like what are the science knowledge that we can mm-hmm. gain from those graphs. Mm-hmm. So that may be the point that really get me my interest into the science and modeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was more like you could see the amazing way this data can be used to generate knowledge, and that what drew you, rather than, for example, you hated onions and you wanted to get away from them as much as possible.
I love onions. No, I don't hate it. Yes. Ah. Yeah. I think you're pretty right. I want to understand it rather than hate a particular crop. I love crops.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Yeah.
And once you'd gone into that data science space, was it how you imagined? Like you must have had an idea a little bit about what it might have been like through doing more technical work. And did it live up to expectations when you came through and started applying the new methods you'd learned?
I guess for me it's, well, if I jumped from the technician role straight to data science, it might be a little bit shock or challenging. But because I have this research associate role in the modeling team for about 2.5 years, it's a bit like a transition, because modeling, especially the crop modeling we're talking about, is more like in between or overlapping quite a bit between plant physiology or agronomy and data science. So we try to use the domain knowledge to drive in the modeling exercise, but data science is more like data driving. And this modeling role is it's like a transaction role for me. So I can slowly pick up the statistic techniques and then apply it into the data we collected in the past. And the data volume or the size is often small. It's not like the data we're dealing with in the data science, it's quite, often quite large. So that transaction role actually helped me to understand the field in the modeling needs and where I can contribute. More and more towards like we need more up-to-date technique to help the modeling, the conventional modeling, like version control, for example. When I discover like I need more techniques, I need to see more data. So that became a natural, when there was a job opened last year, the data scientist in data science, I just applied. And also the previous colleague, Peter Jackson, so he encouraged me, he said, that would be a great opportunity for you. So very, very.
So it seems like there's some key people that helped push your journey. They sort of recognized that you're interested in data science and they pushed you, Lindley and Peter.
And definitely.
Know, as your references pushed you forward to this.
Yeah, definitely right. Because I wasn't sure. Like for me, it's all unknown chapters. I don't know if that's right the direction to go. Mm. And often, if you're facing like unknowns, I quite often quite hesitate. Mm. But that's the point. Like those key people or key mentors, I often refer to like Derek Mote. Like based on their experience and their understanding about me, they will push me or tell me like maybe have a second thought. Yes, but quite often they often just said, just go for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really, really, really cried and met those people and worked with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. And that's led to some interesting projects that you're involved with now. What's your favorite project or what's the project that gets you really excited to talk about?
Well, definitely the natural language processing part.
Like, what does that mean exactly?
So natural language processing is using mathematical approaches or statistical approach to analyze the human language. And it could be English, it could be Chinese. There are many, many different techniques you can use. It's not a new topic. Mm-hmm. Like people have been working on it in the past. I don't know how long, the history goes way back.
So you use maths to process languages, but what's the goal of that? What knowledge do you gain from that process?
I think I should give you a little bit of background about the project, because the natural language processing is a big field. You have the translator, like the Google Translator is also part of the natural language processing project or field. So the part I worked in PFR is attributed to one of the Green Future program called Horticulture Goes Urban. And within the program, Denise Conroy and Tracy Phillip, they have a program working on consumer insights. So they use the approach called, I couldn't pronounce it, but basically the approach they use is doing interviews and panel discussions and doing conversations like we do now, and they capture so they have a set of questions they want to ask, and the interviewees will give their opinions or feedbacks on a particular topic, and they will analyze the transcript data. So in the past, like if they interviewed 30 people in a month, and the next two or three or even half a year, they will go through all these transcripts and read them, and then analyze them, summarize them into different topics, and into group the different topics into different words. So that's the normal way of their analyzing workflow. But natural language processing come into play. We try to use algorithm, or we write code to basically try to find the similarities of the words in between the words or the phrases or sentences, and then see if we can use clustering techniques to group them together and then summarize it that way. So I wouldn't say it's going to be super useful if you have a relatively small data set, so maybe just 10 or 20 transcripts that each only last 3 or 4 pages. You can flip through super quickly. But once you have a large data set, like 500 transcripts, or you have 10,000 literatures you want to go through, or if you have 1,000 survey feedbacks you want to analyze, it became unsustainable for a person to read through all that. And then that's the computer aid came into play. In the past, it called computer aid analysis rather than natural language processing. So there was quite a bit established software to help people do this kind of summarizing the text and then try to basically shrink a big long paragraph into one or two key topic sentence. So to deliver the key message straight away, no computer can do it. So that's basically the high level idea of natural language processing. And the part I try to contribute, because we wasn't sure how we can contribute, and the project was scoped by Peter Jackson, so he left the company last year and then he handed it over to me. So we were both new, so Denise didn't really know how natural language processing or data science in general can contribute, but they were willing to find out and they gave us financial support. And I wasn't sure because I didn't work in the commercial insights domain.
Was there a particular project in mind of how to apply these techniques?
So the project was called Consumer Insights. They want to understand what are the general or expert opinion on controlled environment agriculture. So that's the whole idea of horticulture goes urban. And what their approach is, they interview lots of overseas experts and local industry persons and partner and PFR scientists, like what their opinions about controlled environment agriculture. And some of them are quite positive, some of them are quite negative, and you have someone sit in the middle and unsure where we want to go with this. So the idea of the project is try to find out where are those people from, what are their feedback, either positive, negative, or neutral, and why they gave that opinion. So if they have concerns, what are concerns are. If they have positive feedbacks, what are the positive part? Scientists can use those feedbacks, like a negative feedback maybe concerning about the energy consumption, about controlled environment agriculture. Maybe that's our investment area in the future. Like we try to maybe develop some energy efficient facilities to do controlled environment agriculture. And if the positive part is this controlled environment agriculture is good to mitigate climate change effects. So that's the good part we want to focus on. You use this feedbacks from different person, right? And to give you the direction for future investment or give you some ideas like where should we focus on researching. So that's the power of their research, and I really enjoy it. They work me through like how they normally do their research, and they work. They send me some papers like how this could be powerful. And that's really, really, I think from now, I think every project probably needs some social scientist to help us understand what are the general challenges that exist in the community. And then focus on our energy and resources to do the research rather than like conventionally, it's often like we generate a hypothesis from a scientist's mind or a researcher's mind, and then we try to test it. But then later on, you may find this hypothesis maybe it's not the right time to apply it into the community, or the community is not directly benefit by that research topic. Hmm. Incorporate social science, and I believe that's going to be a super powerful way to make the science more engaging. Especially for New Zealand economy, I think it's relatively small compared to the larger countries, and we need to spend money on the age, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's super interesting. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, so using a mathematics to summarize information that can be from like surveys around a certain topic, and then summarizing the information to get inferences for practical applications.
Yeah, maybe I should give a quick example, like explain how it works. The typical ones will be like you break down all these big paragraphs into different words, right? Like the paragraphs is constants of different words, and then you ask the computer to count how many each word appeared in this mm-hmm. whole paragraph. You have a frequency ranking, and then the top one maybe it's not super relevant. Maybe it's just
like and or the or stop keyword of like in the domain.
Yeah, and we call them as a stop word. So you can either remove them or keep them. And then you rank them, and then you choose the first maybe 10 or 20 and try to extract. We still need some domain knowledge, right? Mm. And to see if are those top ranking words are relative and can explain some of the feedbacks from that person.
Okay.
Yes, so that's the most simple way to ask a computer to do this processing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but now there are way more fancy techniques you can use. Ask mm-hmm. Blake. So he is a super knowledgeable expert in the natural language processing domain now. So mm-hmm. I learned quite a bit from him. The way he did is more advanced and up to like state of art. So he used neural network stuff to do language processing. But mm-hmm. Our data size is still tiny, we're still at the early stage of researching how we can develop our own dictionary. For example, a positive word in finance may be a negative word in our research domain. Mm-hmm. So we need to put the word into context. And that part needs a lot of domain experts. Mm-hmm. Data science can contribute, but it's tiny. So it has to go hands in hands mm-hmm. at the moment. I believe in the future, we still need to work together.
So you've had a large array of diverse products in PFR. Natural language processing is your baby by the sounds of it. You're moving on from PFR soon to do a PhD. Is that going to be part of it? Are you doing onions? Is there going to be any soil hole digging? What does this future look like for you?
Unfortunately, my PhD will be no longer onion related, but it's still a crop. It's focused on potato responses to extreme weather events, especially drought and heat stress. So the PhD project is a little bit distance from natural language processing at the moment. It's more like a physiology focused agronomic system modeling. But I think I can still use my learnings from the natural language processing, especially the part, the soft skill part, like how to do it, how the social scientists taught me interact with people, how they engage with people, how they analyze the people's feedback. Those part is going to be super valuable for doing my PhD, especially my PhD is I'm going to running experiments in India and the US, so it's like a remote. I can't be there all the time. There will be lots of communication involved, and I can use some of the social skills the social scientists taught me, maybe make my PhD journey slightly easier. And I'm sure that when I start to do literature reviews, the natural language processing can definitely help.
Yes, you can shortcut a little bit.
Definitely. I mean, there's a particular technique called bibliometric analysis, basically use mathematic function or equations to summarize all this research has done in the past, and you just provide keywords and all the big search databases, I mean the knowledge database, they provide this kind of service. Apparently you probably need to pay a little bit, but because I already have this little knowledge I learned from work, I can shortcut a bit, like you said, to understand, to help my research make the PhD journey.
That sounds great. I wish I'd had knowledge of those techniques when I started my PhD. And the literature review is definitely one of the hardest parts of reading hundreds of papers and summarizing. So if you got these tools that can give you hints into where the information may lay or the landscape, can be quite good.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you still have to read it.
Of course.
Or read them. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think the computer is that advanced or the technique is that advanced to extract the information you need. It's not like the Star Trek series. You talk to a computer and says, computer, give me the location of which planet, and they just give you and set out the route. Maybe in the future it can. Maybe Google Map can do that already. But in the research domain, I don't see that that's happening just yet.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So reflecting back on this entire journey, if you were to give advice to a younger version of yourself or to other scientists that are coming through, you obviously had a lot of, it hasn't been a particularly linear journey for you. How would you give advice to someone who's looking to come into science?
Well, that's a tough one. I think if I'm going to travel back in time and tell my younger self, I probably will tell him, be specific about what you want. Yeah, because I think early, especially after I graduated from my undergraduate, I didn't know what I want to do, and I wasted lots of time trying to find out who I really am, what I want to do, where I can start, and that's definitely not good. And another one is probably be specific about the why, because if there is something like during my journey, if I did quite a bit work about taught myself about data science and learning R and Python. So those topics, if I don't know why I'm doing it, it's gonna be super hard. And I believe figuring out why is even more important than the what. But you have to have the what first and then try to ask yourself why I want to do it, right? The third point is probably talk to people and find mentors. And mentor is for me is a game changer. So if I didn't meet Professor Derek Mood or Lindy or Peter or all my lab managers and the people who helped me in the past, my life would be completely different journey, right? But I'm grateful that I met those people and they made my journey today. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
You're welcome.
Thank you out there for listening. If you want to hear more of our podcast, please check out our SciGest podcast page or subscribe to our channel in iTunes or your favourite podcast provider. And don't forget to post a review and rate this podcast. Matiwa, and see you next time.